show ever on 97.5 The Fanatic.
It's 2 o'clock in Philadelphia and time for the best show ever. Now, your starting lineup. Bring in the heat. Ricky. The Fanatic, Philadelphia.
Good afternoon on this Victory Monday. Best show ever here on 97.5 The Fanatic, NBC Sports Philadelphia. 610-632-0975 is the number to participate. Oh, it feels good. Let's get right to our opening statements. Start with the word of the day. And the word of the day today is command. Because the Eagles were in complete command of that game. And contrary to what the quote-unquote worldwide leaders trying to gaslight to make us believe, they're in command of the conference, too. 11-1 now, Philadelphia Eagles. And it was such a good victory because every question that some fraud fans here and other people around the country had got answered. Now, just a few weeks ago when they lost to Washington, we had to deal with a bunch of people talking about, look at this gauntlet of running backs you're going against coming up. Yeah, they had that under control. They had full command of the game. There wasn't a single moment in the game where I thought they would lose. Not a single moment. Watching that game was like a spa day. Watching that game was like hanging out with your buddies back when you're like 10 years old and you're the age where you can kind of play by yourself without your parents watching you all the time. That sense of freedom and joy that you have as a young kid where you're now allowed to maybe you don't have to ask to go to the edge of the block. That's how it felt. Just free. Just freedom and fun. That's what that game was. They're in complete command of everything. They ran the ball last week against the Packers. They passed the ball this week. Because I noticed people, well, if you keep running that way, if you keep trying to run for the, or you do what you have to do week by week because you have a dynamic offense. You have an excellent offensive line. You have a, they can run block and pass block. So you do what's necessary on that given day, and that's what they did on the offensive side. Jalen Hurts answers his historic day, running and passing, but more running last week, with a great game through the air, putting the ball exactly where it needed to be time after time after time. We mentioned it. You knew he was going to have his chip on his shoulder going against his ex-team. A.J. Brown steps right in there, does the fake belt. You got to take that whooping. And boy, did he administer a whooping onto the Titans. Their offense looks like they need A.J. Brown. Who would have thunk that getting rid of A.J. Brown or getting rid of a good player could hurt your offense? And then on the defensive side, remember, oh, that gauntlet of running backs. Now the 3-0 against the gauntlet with Saquon coming up. Oh, no, what is ever going to happen? Oh, they lost to Washington once. You know these teams now, they're going to copy the blueprint. The blueprint. All right, you are not Jay-Z. You better cut it out with the blueprint. All right? There's no blueprint to facing this team when they have everything going. There's no blueprint. Okay? There is no blueprint. Okay? A team got lucky once. That was the blueprint. The Eagles made a bunch of mistakes to help a team, and then they got some bad calls and they lost the game. There is no blueprint. All right, you are not Jay-Z. You're not Blueprint. You're not Blueprint 2. You're not Blueprint 3. You are no. They held the vault. Oh, my God, Derrick Henry, I'm so afraid. 3 yards a carry, longest run, 6 yards. 3 yards a carry, longest run, 6 yards. Control that. And then the special teams. We've been talking about that. Now, that was real. Tighten that all the way up. Tightened it all the way up. This is what they decided to do. That's what he did. That's what he decided to do. They finally got it. Michael Clay took care of that business. Britton Covey, how dare you guys talk about Britton Covey? How dare you guys talk about Britton Covey? How dare you? I mean, I don't know who was doing that. He was excellent yesterday. He was excellent. Three of his returns last night were career logs. This is what happens when the command of the situation from the coach down through the quarterback, down through the players, everything's on all cylinders. Nothing feels better than a victory Monday. And let me tell you something. I'm going to say it right now at the top of the program. This right here is the best Eagles team I've ever seen. Hunter Brody, how are you?
I'm feeling great. I really want to look at the coaches because I thought the coaching staff, obviously the players executed on the field and that matters, but you talk about the week heading into the action and they set the tone. And the coach without Dallas Goedert a few weeks back, heavy tight end packages, we're going, what the hell are they really doing right now? And each week you're seeing them look more comfortable. It really is just giving them a highlight that they figured it out as the weeks went on, what they could do in the passing game without one of the best tight ends in all of football. And they didn't overthink this. You saw the Titans had weaknesses in their corners, and you attacked. Yes, the Eagles can run the ball very well, but we see it throughout the league every single week. What are the coaches doing? Why are they overthinking? I think they're trying to do too much. They stayed simple. They didn't worry about it too much. They simplified their game, and they just used Devontae Smith and A.J. Brown, and they had over 100 yards each. It's just ridiculous what they did, and that's including all the false starts, and I'm not worried about that long term. That seemed more of like an outlier, weird, strange game. The refs were awful too, both sides. But yeah, I'm not worried about the false starts as a problem as this team moves forward or anything. It just shows you it's crazy that they had the offensive success. The first drive, two false starts, one from Kelce and Lane, your pros' pros, and then you have the timeout usage. Not a worry in the world for this quarterback as he's the MVP of the league. I want to shout out Brian Johnson. I don't think we really talk about him a lot. A lot of it too was Jalen Hurts, the quarterback. Without his mental makeup, I don't think you're here. But he is the quarterback's coach, and I think we talked about this before the season began. A good relationship between those two. And last year, all these guys were wide open, and you could see Quez or Devontae with their hands up deep down the field. You don't see that anymore. Instead, it's right on the money, and A.J. Brown is securing it off the shoulder with a 0% separation. It doesn't even make sense how he was able to do that. So just awesome. And then, of course, Jonathan Gannon. All right, we talked about this on Friday, on Football Friday. It's simple. You take away their run, and you're going to be okay. And with Ryan Tannehill, it was frustrating to see him get a couple runs, but you knew long-term, if that's what he was going to do, use his legs, and he would have to throw their way to victory, you were going to win by the time it was all said and done. I can't believe this offense went on a 9-minute and 51-second drive in the second half. They are just so dominant, and it's a beautiful watch.
This offense is clicking on all cylinders. This is the best team in football, not the best team in the NFC. This is the best team in football. Book your hotels, book your flights, get all the tickets you possibly can for the Super Bowl, because I really believe this team's going to end up there. When you look at how good they are offensively, and you brought up Dallas Goedert, I think that's a bump. I think it was a speed bump, and they've gotten over that. They understand exactly what they need to do. The weapons on this offense are just too much for any defense in the league. Because what do you do? Think about this for a second. You're going defensively against the Eagles. We talk about defensively against other teams. You go defensively against the Eagles. What do you try to stop first? You don't. They are the best balanced attack in football. And that's what makes them so great, because we saw Devontae Smith get in on it. We saw A.J. Brown in on it. You need a couple yards here, you give it to Sanders. Everybody had something to do with that win yesterday. And I'm going to go to adjustments. I love talking about adjustments. And the one thing that we have tried to blast Gannon on is certain things about the running game coming up against the Eagles. You know what impressed me the most about this? I'm no scout, but I watched Henry in the last couple weeks, and what you need to do is hit him low. I was fortunate enough to go to that game yesterday with my daughter Olivia. It was fantastic. But what I noticed in the first quarter, they were going after his legs. How do you stop a big guy? You go after his bottom half. That's exactly what the Eagles did. Great coaching job by Jonathan Gannon. And whoever we blast this week, you're going to have a great game, because we criticized Brenton Covey about as much as we possibly could last week. He comes up with three really good run backs. And in my opinion, this team is made up of those adjustments. And they have been doing a hell of a job week in, week out, making adjustments. And even in game, I mean, the game was a little close early on, but I thought defensively they tightened up. Like you said, it was Ryan Tannehill running for, 10, 15 yards on third down. After that, it was all third and longs, and Tannehill had nowhere to go after that first quarter.
Yeah, he ended up with Tannehill had 34 yards rushing on three carries.
The first two were for like 25, I think.
Yeah, the long one he had was 17, and that was that. Derrick Henry, again, 11 carries, 30 yards.
30 yards.
2.7 yards per carry for the blueprint.
The blueprint
is open. Let me tell you something. This is the best team in football. The team is better than the previous Super Bowl team. This team, I'm not waiting. I'm not waiting until, Willie Gooden with us. No. This team is in command of the situation. Miss me with Dallas. I'm not impressed with them. I'm not impressed with the Giants and their little Washington tie. I'm not impressed with Minnesota. I'm not impressed with anybody else in this league, really, outside of our Philadelphia Eagles. It is Victory Monday. We're going to feel good about this today. We'll have Nick Sirianni's press conference at 2:45. Trust me, that'll be the worst part of the situation, most likely. It's needed, but if he could only have his press conferences one quarter as good as his game plans, boy, would we be for a fun ride. We'll talk to E.J. Smith of the Inquirer at 433-610-632-0975. Talking about the game and also just talk about the bigger picture. This team's good, and they're going to get better next week when they get Maddox back. They're going to get better the following week when they get Goddard back because he's on schedule. And by the end of the year, everybody's going to be saying what we're saying right now. This is the team to beat. Everything goes to Philadelphia, and I already booked my first class flight to Arizona. Some of y'all need to go on Expedia.com, Travelocity, or something, and get the job done. We'll be back here on 97.5 The Fanatic, NBC Sports Philadelphia.
The best show ever on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
97.5 The Fanatic.
But right now, joining us on the Comcast Business Hotline, covers the Phillies for the Inquirer. We'll get to the phones right after that. Mr. Scott Lauber, how are you today, Scott?
Doing well, Tyrone. How are you?
Man, thank you for coming on. I couldn't be doing any better right now. So Trey Turner, 11 years, $300 million. We can't believe it got done so quickly and early in the day out there in San Diego time, West Coast time. So are you surprised that this came together seemingly so quickly?
Honestly, I'm not, and I'll tell you why. I've covered Dave Dombrowski for a long time. I've covered him on a day-in, day-out basis since 2015 when he took over the Red Sox and I was working in Boston. And I've known him to kind of be decisive isn't necessarily the word. I have known him to be very direct when he knows what he wants. When he a specific area of need, he goes out and addresses it. So, for example, when he took over the Red Sox, he said, we need an ace, top-of-the-rotation pitcher. And really, right around this same time of year at the winter meetings, he signed David Price. You know, the following year, he said, we need another ace, and he traded for Chris Sale. So when the need is specific, and the Phillies' need was very specific, they pinpointed from the day after the World Series ended, they talked about needing a middle infielder, specifically a shortstop. When it's that specific of a need, he typically can target, can identify the target, and he's decisive about going to get it. So, honestly, I'm not surprised. I thought it might happen this week. Didn't know it was going to happen on the first day of the meetings, but I thought, you know, that there was momentum toward this happening. And then you combine Dombrowski and the way he operates with the way the Phillies have operated over the last 5 years. You know, I think about the last five off seasons, this being the fifth, they have targeted their off season priority and then they've gotten the player, you know, whether it was Bryce Harper or Zach Wheeler or JT Realmuto bringing him back or last year Schwarber and then eventually Castellanos, they have identified their target and they have gotten their man. And so they did that once again. They identified Trey Turner as the best of the four shortstops they thought, and they wound up going out and getting him. So kind of par for the course of the way it's been, the way they've done business here the last few years.
Well, how about this? Are you surprised that it was 11 years to lower the AAV, and how do you think that impacts the rest of the guys still waiting at the shortstop position?
A little bit. I mean, look, we saw them do it with Bryce Harper. We saw them go to 13 years to lower the AAV. So it'll be the second largest overall value that the Phillies have ever signed a player to behind Harper, and it'll be the highest AAV, but still less than $30 million. It's 27 point something, like $2 million. For the 11 years for the average annual value. Now, you combine Didi Gregorius and Gene Segura, and I think they came to $28 million this past year between the two of them. So it does give the Phillies flexibility going forward, even starting right now, to maybe spend a little bit more in another area. Now, I'm not telling you that they're going to go get Carlos Rodon. I don't think that's going to happen. Obviously, Justin Verlander off the market today going to the Mets. But maybe it enables them to shop in like the 3A tier of starters rather than the 3B tier, you know what I'm saying? So I think it certainly probably made Trey Turner move a little bit more quickly. The way I thought this was going to go, to be honest with you, was I thought we'd see Aaron Judge sign with either the Yankees or the Giants or whoever he's going to sign with. And then the shortstop market would move. But when you dangle an 11-year deal out there for $300 million, you know, Trey Turner's not going to do better than that. So I'm sure that, you know, in stretching out the deal and adding some dollars, that they were able to maybe make Trey Turner make a move here a little bit more quickly than he otherwise would have.
Now, if I'm not wrong, they're still right around $34 million under the threshold. Am I correct in saying that?
I think that's about right.
That's about right. So, I mean, obviously they need starting pitcher and some bullpen help. Is that just about what they're looking for right now to finish this thing off?
Yeah, 100%, Ricky. Like, their focus now, I think, shifts to the pitching market. I count 411 innings combined between Eflin, Gibson, Syndergaard, Knebel, Hand, and Robertson this year. Now, some of those innings will get replaced internally, but not all of them, obviously. And, you know, I think they need to go out there and they need to find that middle-of-the-rotation guy who's going to give you 150-plus innings. At least the league average, at league average ERA, you know, I tweeted the other day and some people kind of had, you know, some funny things to say back to me. But, you know, look, Kyle Gibson, before he had the worst September that he could have possibly had, you know, was pitching to like a league average ERA for 4 months of the year and was eating innings. You know, I think through like 130 or 140 innings, he had a league average ERA. And that's not, you know, just anything to just discard. I mean, you have to replace that. So, you know, that's not necessarily going to be a pitcher who's going to start for you in a postseason game, but he's going to be a pitcher who's going to help you get to the postseason. And that's what they need to find. So whether it's Jose Quintana or Jameson Taillon or, you know, any of these guys who are like in the three or fourth tier of starting pitchers, you know, I think that those are guys that they're going to be targeting now to kind of help fill in that innings gap that they're losing with some of the guys who are free agents who are not coming back.
Now, to save some money, would this make it easier on the Phillies to bring up an Andrew Painter and stick him in the number five slot next year?
I don't know. I don't know if, because Andrew Painter will be making, you know, minimum salary. So
correct.
I don't know that there's a financial component necessarily, because I think that they were going to do that anyway. Like, I think their fifth starter was going to be what, you know, their fifth starter on opening day, whether it's Painter or Falter or Sanchez or somebody else, was going to be a low salary, you know, minimum salary guy anyway. So what it might do, as I said, though, is it might allow them to maybe spend a little bit more on that number four guy. And maybe that makes them a little bit more willing to go with an Andrew Painter on opening day. I mean, but they seemed pretty intent anyway on going young in that fifth spot, going young and inexpensive. So, you know, maybe it allows them to maybe make a play now for a pitcher who would have been out of their range if the shortstop had cost, you know, $32 million a year or something like that.
We're talking to Scott Lauber, covers the Phillies for the Philadelphia Inquirer. Scott, with the Bryce Harper situation, with him being out most likely till the All-Star break, at least that's being conservative. Maybe he's back quicker, but you can't bank on it. How do you think they'll set up their lineup? I'm not asking you to give 1 through 9, but how do you think they set up the top of the order now with Turner without having Bryce Harper, at least for the first couple months of the season? Because Let me tell you, I feel a lot more comfortable right now than I did before they made that Turner signing.
Yeah, I mean, the best way that they were going to replace Bryce Harper was by signing a star shortstop. You know, they weren't going to go out there and sign a right fielder who was then going to have to go to the bench when Harper comes back, whether it's in April or whether it's in May or June or July. So the best thing to do was to sign a shortstop, and they got, you know, a guy who's a top-of-the-order kind of hitter, whether he bats leadoff, whether he bats second. Turner can do a lot of different things. So the question will be, I think, heading into spring training, you know, what do they do in the leadoff spot? Do they use Trey Turner there? We've heard, and we'll have a chance. Rob Thompson will be here tomorrow, so I expect to ask him that and maybe get some clarity on where he sees Trey Turner fitting in the lineup when we talk to him tomorrow. But, you know, I do think that he's a top-of-the-order guy, whether it's the leadoff spot or not. So, you know, I think you could have a Turner-Schwarber or Schwarber-Turner left-right 1-2 followed by, you know, probably Real Muto, probably Castellanos, and probably Rhys Hoskins. What I love about this, and you know, I would have said the same thing had it been Bogarts or had it been Correa, had it been any of the top four shortstops, is that it lengthens the lineup. So now, instead of batting second, Rhys Hoskins can bat, you know, sixth or even seventh. And I mean, is that not as good a sixth or seventh hitter as there is in the league? Right? I mean, he's going to hit you 30 home runs out of the sixth spot. So I think it lengthens the lineup. It makes the lineup a lot more diverse as well, because Turner does some things on the bases with his speed that not a lot of guys in that lineup did before. So I think he makes them more diverse. I think he makes the lineup longer, and it just gives them another guy, you know, in the top one or two spots in the order who can really make things happen.
Today's definitely about Turner, but since you just brought up Rhys, what do you think this whole Rhys Hoskins thing is moving forward? You got the arbitration year, but long term, I mean, I know it's hard to kind of see that play out, but he's definitely the one that's always brought up when we talk about the future of what's going to happen here. And just where do you think that stands right now?
Well, I mean, you know, look, he's arbitration eligible for one more year, and I think they go through the arbitration process with him and deal with that at the end of next year, you know, in terms of like free agency. He's a Scott Boras client. Scott Boras clients very often, when they get this close to free agency, you know, want to, a lot of players, I shouldn't say just Scott Boras clients, but most players, when they get this close to free agency, want to become free agents and sort of see what's out there for them with the opportunity to always come back potentially to where they already are. So maybe they let it play out. You know, I think that's probably the most likely scenario, is that they let it play out for one more year. I wrote the other day, and I can't say this enough, is that, you know, his value on the trade market, Rhys Hoskins' value on the trade market is minimized because of the fact that he's only under control for one more year. You know, anyone who thinks that the Phillies are going to trade Rhys Hoskins and get back a quality top of the rotation type starter, you're fooling yourself, because the acquiring team would only have him for one year. So to me, for a while now, I've thought that his value to the Phillies is greater on the roster than anywhere else in a trade or whatnot. So I think he's back. I think he's back for one more year, and I think they figure it out beyond that. So, but again, you know, the Turner thing, we talk about the AAV being 27 and change instead of, you know, 30 plus million. You know, the design there for the Phillies is to give themselves flexibility in future years to do things that, you know, look, Trey Turner as a shortstop at age 40 at the end of this contract may not look very good, probably won't look very good. But the fact of the matter is that they can do some things now in the next few years around Turner and Harper and Real Muto and Schwarber and Castellanos and Wheeler, and, you know, to kind of keep their window open a little bit longer in 10. So I think that was kind of the whole point of that.
Well, Scott, appreciate the time as usual, man. You are going to have a fun off season, sir, and we're all going to have a fun season, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right. Sounds good, everyone. Thanks.
All right. That was Scott Lauber on the Comcast Business Hotline, covers the Phillies for the Inquirer.
The best show ever on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic, NBC Sports Philadelphia. Best show ever. 610-632-0975. 5 o'clock hour brought to you by Guided Door and Window. Take advantage of Guided Big Year End Sale. Big Year End Sale. Receive 40% off all windows and doors until December 31st. Call 1-877-GO-GUIDE or visit goguida.com. We'll get to the phones in just a moment, but on the Comcast Business Hotline, covers the Phillies for NBC Sports Philadelphia, NBCSportsPhiladelphia.com. Mr. Corey Seidman, how are you today, Corey?
I'm great, Tyrone. It's a pretty exciting day. I mean, this is it's like the moment Phillies fans have been waiting for months. They've been anticipating it, and Dave Dombrowski and John Middleton and the group were able to get it done, bringing in Trey Turner.
Bringing in Trey Turner, I think no one's shocked that they got him, period. The timing shocked quite a few people, including us, especially since it's just early in the day out there, and usually these deals seem to come out in the evening. But the 11 years, $300 million, the AAV, are you surprised that he went, I guess low is the wrong word, but I don't have another one. Are you surprised he signed for that low amount compared to maybe just the year before where Corey Seager got $32.5 million in an AAV? So you're surprised his average per year was as low as it is?
That's a good comparison, bringing up Corey Seager. I mean, I think Trey Turner is the far superior player. It's interesting. You know, you see the different priorities guys have when they sign these huge deals. With Bryce Harper, his priority was to stay in one place, and that was kind of borne out in the details of the contract, it being 13 years, $330 million to bring down the AAV. Trey Turner deal, you have to look at it similarly. Everybody expected this guy was going to get $300 million, maybe a little less, maybe a little more. But to spread it out over 11 years, it's an AAV of $27.27 million per year, which is obviously incredible money for 99.99% of the world. But, you know, you look at the landscape of baseball contracts, that's 27th all time in per year value, 27th all time. So you keep in mind that, you know, the prices only go up as years go by. You keep in mind that Trey Turner is like a top 10, maybe like a top 7, maybe some would say a top 5 all-around player, position player in all of baseball. That's a pretty good price from a team perspective. It's also less than the Phillies cleared up just in the form of Gene Segura and Didi Gregorius coming off the books themselves. So even if you, you know, remove everything else from the equation, everybody else the Phillies had coming off their payroll, except for Segura and Gregorius, it basically pays for Trey Turner here. And you know, I tweeted this out a little bit ago, but you know, I don't know if Trey Turner is as big a name, as big a selling point to the casual baseball fan as Bryce Harper is, but this has a chance to be as impactful of a move because, you know, you put this guy on this roster that already has Harper and Real Muto, Trey Turner might be the best all-around player of the bunch when you combine offense, defense, base running, and the position he plays.
How much of a role do you think Kevin Long played into the signing, just knowing that their relationship between him and Turner is a strong one?
Yeah, I think all those little things helped. I think that this was a long time coming. It was months in the making, and the relationship with Bryce Harper, the relationship with Kevin Long, you know, two guys who were there during Trey Turner's formative baseball years, you know, that had to be a positive during this process. There was also Turner's often cited desire to play on the East Coast, which played in the Phillies' favor. I say that, you know, the Padres who came in, it seemed like the Padres kind of came in at the last second there as a big-time competitor for Trey Turner. That was one team that could put a scare in you because you know that the Padres are all in. They've made all these moves to, you know, move their chips into the center of the table, you know, going out and trading for Juan Soto and trading for Josh Hader and all these other contracts they have. You remember that Padres team drafted Trey Turner in the first round back in 2014, so they wanted to try to correct that mistake by bringing him back. But there was just so much mutual interest on his part, on the Phillies' part. They add another $300 million contract to the mix, but you know, as I said, with all the money that came off the payroll this offseason, there's still a lot else the Phillies can do, you know, in terms of starting pitching, in terms of bullpen help. But the big prize, you know, the number one target on their board, they were able to land him. They were able to complete that deal on the first day of the winter meetings here.
Corey, you just brought up starting pitching. Obviously, the Phillies are still $39 million under the second threshold. In your opinion, what kind of number starter you think they're looking for right now?
Wow, $39 million. I mean, I think it's a little bit less than that just when you...
Well, it is because there are players that aren't involved in that yet, but it's still...
Right.
That's the number they're giving right now.
Right. So, I mean, I think that there's a lot the Phillies can accomplish in terms of the starting pitching market. Like, you know, after Verlander comes off the board and DeGrom's off the board, the next option, some people had him as the top option to begin with, was Carlos Rodon. I don't think that's all that realistic, especially after you add this giant contract to the mix. You know, if you go out and you sign Rodon to what he's seeking, which is probably like $28-30 million a year, all that free wiggle room you might have is, you know, most of it's dried up. I also am not, personally, I'm not giving a guy like that $30 million a year over 6-7 years, considering, you know, Rodon had one fully healthy season, which was this past season. So not nearly enough for me to invest that much money in him personally if I'm running a team. But in terms of pitchers, you know, you can see the Phillies chase Chris Bassett, who pitched very well against the Phillies with the Mets this past season. He's out there, probably a guy you can get on like a 2 or 3 year deal, maybe, you know, in that $15 million or so range per year. Jameson Taillon is a name that the Phillies have been connected to. MLB.com reporting that the Phillies have some interest in Jameson Taillon, who had a really good year for the Yankees this past season. There's Nate Eovaldi, who Dave Dombrowski has some history with in Boston. I believe that he was in charge in Boston when the Red Sox signed Eovaldi to a big contract. I wouldn't be shocked if the Phillies explored bringing back Noah Syndergaard, but I don't think that can be like the rotation move you make this offseason. I think it needs to be someone who's better and more reliable than that, because as we saw in the playoff run last season, the Phillies didn't have a number four starter. They need somebody they can at least trust at that point in the season, at that point in the year, to go five innings for them. So, I mean, that's definitely an area to address here, because as we sit, they have Wheeler, Nola, Suarez, and question marks beyond that. They have the hope that Painter could contribute in 2023. Maybe Griff McGarry could contribute in 2023. But you don't want to rely on that. You need to go out and sign some veteran arms to supplement this roster. And you also don't sign Trey Turner if you're not planning to do that. I mean, they're not signing Trey Turner to win 87 games or to finish in third place. They're doing it because they think they can win the division and make another deep playoff run.
We're talking to Corey Seidman from NBC Sports Philadelphia. Dombrowski, you're a young guy, Corey, but you're now a veteran. You've been around a couple different iterations of this Phillies team. The Dombrowski, and he brings this calm. I'm sure when you deal with him, you see that. Just could you just speak to how important it is to have a guy at the top who just knows what he's doing and contrast that with the organization before he arrived?
Yeah, I mean, he's a veteran baseball executive who is confident and comfortable in his surroundings and has dealt with a lot of these other executives and other teams for decades upon decades. So he has rapport with important people, whether it's, you know, guys controlling other teams or the agents pulling strings behind the scenes. That's very important. He's also always around and he's always visible. And I don't mean just, you know, in terms of talking to the media. I mean, he's always around the team, makes all the road trips. He goes in the clubhouse after games and he pats a guy on the back after he made a good relief appearance or had a good start, or, you know, he tells a guy, you know, hang with him if he had a tough luck night at the plate. So I think all those little things matter. And it's just, as you said, like a sense of calm that has just permeated throughout the organization since his arrival. It has proven to be a very good fit. I mean, I know that when he was first hired, some people looked at his track record and they said, this is a guy who at past stops has sold the farm and he's gone all in. But, you know, I just think that with all those kinds of narratives that surround a player or a coach or a general manager, you have to look at the context. And the context was that the previous stops where he was, they were in win-now situations where the owners wanted to spend money and gave him the go-ahead to act in that fashion. But, you know, we've seen him act differently here with the Phillies. It's not like he went out and traded their top prospects at this past deadline to go all in. He made, you know, moves around the edges. He gave up a good prospect in Logan Ohapi to bring back Brandon Marsh, but it was those other moves, like the smaller moves for Syndergaard and David Robertson, which really helped the Phillies in the pennant race. So, like, that was another thing. I think that a move that stuck out to me that Dombrowski made this past season that you don't see every GM or president of baseball operations make is the trade he made for Edmundo Sosa, because it wasn't a hole. It wasn't like a glaring flaw the Phillies had, but he saw it as a way, like, let me bring in a young, controlled, very good defensive shortstop. Might not need him at this moment, but he might pay off in the future. And like Edmundo Sosa helped the Phillies win some games down the stretch. Those are the kinds of moves that a savvy baseball executive makes. That's one example out of many. Trey Turner moved today, obviously a much, much bigger splash, but he's proven that, you know, he knows how to win in multiple different ways. And the Phillies are a much better organization overall than they were just a few short years ago. I mean, I just think about this, like 2017, when we're sitting through another one of those down years of Phillies baseball, someone would have told you that in, you know, 5 years, Bryce Harper is going to be a Philly, JT Realmuto is going to be a Philly, Trey Turner is going to be a Philly, they're going to get the Game 6 of the World Series. I think Phillies fans would be pretty happy.
We're definitely going to have a long time to debate this because this will be the debate of the offseason. But in your eyes, do you continue to bat Schwarber first and Turner slides into the second, Harper third, or is Turner automatically leading off to you?
I think, you know, it's a big question, and I think that there's not a clear answer because, you know, you got to remember there's two different Phillies lineups. There's the Phillies lineup that's going to play the first, you know, 75 or so games of the season, and then there's the Phillies lineup that's going to incorporate Bryce Harper back into it and, you know, hopefully be at full strength. When they're fully healthy, I think it does make sense to split up the lefties, Schwarber and Harper. A way to split up the lefties would be by batting Schwarber one and Harper three, but that's not the only
thing. Attaboy, Corey.
Smart man. We're pro Schwarber leading off here.
Okay, you are pro Schwarber leading
off.
All right, what I'll say is that that's not the only way to split up the lefties, though. You could also have Turner bat one, Schwarber two, Realmuto three, Harper four. That way you go ready, lefty. But I do see some logic in keeping Schwarber in that spot. I mean, for all the hand-wringing last year about the low on-base percentage and the fact that he was hitting like 220, how many times did he show us the value of a leadoff home run and how that can set a tone for a game and how it can excite the dugout and excite the home crowd? And, you know, that's not something you can really measure. So I think that factors into it a little bit as well. But it's a great two options to have. You either have this guy who can hit a leadoff homer with the best of them, or Trey Turner, who's just so dynamic, hit a double, hit a homer, hit a single and steal two bases. He's just going to be so much fun to watch.
Well, Corey, I appreciate you coming on with short notice. We are as excited as you are. You're going to have a fun off season. You're going to have a fun season. Thanks for coming on.
My pleasure. Have a good day, guys.
All right. That was Corey Simon from NBC Sports Philadelphia. 610-632-0975. Tom and callers, I promise we'll get you on the other side. Nothing but you guys the rest of the day with us sprinkled in here on 97.5 The Fanatic at NBC Sports Philadelphia.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.